by Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory number 89. A little light on the NBA front this week. LeBron James, the big one, extending two seasons. Player option at the end for 24-25. Lakers get him one extra year effectively here, which makes me wonder, what are they eyeing to do behind the scenes? What gives James assurance that these next two seasons will go well? Are they going to look at this rest situation and say, we'll run out the clock on this and then pursue Irving next offseason possibly? Could something get done on that front sooner? Headline this morning, Lakers now willing to look at moving two picks for Irving, though not the Pacers package, which has been kicked around as Buddy Hield and Miles Turner. Maybe it comes to needing to do that. The Durant holdout possibility, his insistence that he still wants this trade, those could leave the possibility open that Irving gets moved before or early this season, and maybe that saves the Lakers ultimately, but Nets still want to remain competitive. So picks, Westbrook, who would inevitably be released, I don't see it. Lakers up there on the national TV list this year, again as the schedule comes out this year. Potentially not great, good for laughs if things go sideways there, and it certainly was last year. I mean, that Pelicans game, I'll never forget all the mishaps that happened. Really, one of the most comical schadenfreude games I've ever seen in the NBA. That one between those two teams. And a big reason I think that the Lakers didn't seriously pursue that play-in round. They didn't want to be the sole product one night getting embarrassed by a team that they did the Anthony Davis trade with in New Orleans. Pelicans ultimately make the playoffs, beating the Spurs and winning another game after that to get in. I want to talk about them today. They're the exciting team, I think, in the NBA right now. Tons of potential with the roster they have. Nearly limitless, I think, if Zion Williamson reaches his peak, which, you know, will kick around his future. My concerns with him are still defense, health, and not much of a shot, though he may not need one with the way he approaches the game. So I'll boil it down to, yes, staying on the floor and defending, which has not been his forte. Herb Jones joined the fold last year, and that should help them overall on that end, but he can't do everything. This team needs to form a bit of a defensive backbone, and they have a lot to give up in this Durant trade possibility here. They are already the number one offense in the league as it stands. They could be, but does Durant give them an array of skills that would bolster them to championship-level contention? It'd be close, I think, and they have quite a bit to offer in terms of picks. Brandon Ingram is a centerpiece, but how much further do you have to go beyond that? Reports have stated they don't want to offer Ingram, period. So it's going to be tough sledding for them to get in on this without that. If they do, they could potentially be the leader here. But does Durant want to go to New Orleans? That's going to be the question. Does he want to be there for 4 years? Does he want to live there? Does he want to make that his identity? Playing next to Zion and CJ. It's an interesting core. I think there's a decent leadership forming there between Coach Willie Green, a bit of an identity with CJ coming in. He helped resolve the Zion standoff that it was seemingly a bit of a cold relationship between the team and player that eventually got rekindled by the end of the year and then ultimately ended with a extension signing there. So we've kicked around Jalen for Durant plenty. Where's Durant ultimately going to end up? I think New Orleans could be near the front of that list with Toronto. Boston, of course, still in that mix as well. I'm not quite down from it yet. I'm getting there. I didn't love the Nash and Mark stuff, as I said last week. But, man, the talent, the prospect of being on that short list of championship contenders, it's so enticing. It really is still, even with all the red flags. Though I love the Celtics, I'm excited to start previewing them. I think odds are I'm taking next week off. Spent some time on the Patriots beat this week. Enjoyed that. CLNS Media got a couple of write-ups on their joint practices with the Panthers. I'm actually quietly excited to watch that team. Maybe I just want football back. I enjoy being a football fan of the Patriots now that I've moved on to the media side of the Celtics. So I still like having that, maintaining that. But I put my media hat on, went down there, asked some questions, took some notes. I think I did some good stuff down there, so go check that out. And of course, here on Dome Theory, two episodes this week. Justin Rowan talked Cavs. Now we're going to talk Pelicans. Maybe this will be a start of our previews around the league. We can start early here, mid-July, and roll right through training camp, which is just about a month away as we sit here on August 19th. Andrew Lopez of ESPN's with us. He covers the Pelicans, who are now, according to betonline.ag, in terms of favorites in the NBA. They pushed the Suns last year in the first round. Ingram has that sensational performance in that series. And now, as far as NBA futures go, championship contenders, they stack up somewhere around the middle of this list. You can get the Pelicans to win the championship at plus 4,000 right now on betonline.ag. Same class as the Hawks, Bulls, Knicks, Timberwolves, Grizzlies. So not terrible competition for them, though Grizzlies, Timberwolves odds are nearly twice as low as the Pelicans. Favorites as it stacks up, still the Celtics, Bucks, Warriors, 700, 750 for the Clippers, 950 for the Suns. Nets hanging around, plus 1,400. They think that Durant's going to stay. Maybe they think the Lakers are going to make a splash here and that LeBron's extending because they're plus 1,400. Miami, plus 1,600, as well as the 76ers. Nuggets, 2,000. Love that bet. It's really good odds there. Dallas, 2,200. Grizzlies, as we said, 2,500. Least likely team, you can get the Rockets at 100,000. Now, you're going to get baseball every night over at betonline.ag. The World Cup is coming up. You can get some futures on the World Cup. It's going to be weird, a holiday World Cup. That should be going on now. I don't love what they did kicking that to the winter. Not going to feel right. You got golf. Want to do some FedEx 500 round two? Go get that. Football futures. Of course, NFL regular season is in the immediate vicinity. What did that Deshaun Watson news, an 11-game suspension, do for NFL futures in terms of championship? Cleveland now coming in at plus 4,500, nearly the same as the Patriots, who are plus 5,000. Long shots to win the Super Bowl now. They were a Super Bowl contender last year preseason. It's amazing how it's falling apart there. Their own doing, getting in on Watson. Didn't think that was a great idea with all the storm to come. I might write about that this week before I head away. But Bet Online, you can get all that and more. I just like going over there for the information. You know, I love betting on games, but if I just want to figure out how BetOnline's feeling about things, that can sometimes be an indicator of where the sports are going. And BetOnline's the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. You can't beat that. You can't beat their website. Sleek, clean design, the ticker on the left side to toggle between the different leagues, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, golf, it's all there. And they're a top online resource for all your sports information, in-game live betting, props, and futures. Head to betonline.ag today and use your mobile device to sign up and use the code CLNS50. That's CLNS50. You'll get 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Put $100 in, you'll get 50 back. BetOnline with a game start. Shout out to them. As always, great supporters of Dome Theory and CLNS Media. We got phenomenal shirts out, so go over to athleticgreens.com/garden. Go get their product. It's awesome. Tropical tasting powder you put in your water every morning, and it gives you the probiotics, nutrients, vitamins, antigens, a little bit of everything that you need to maintain your health, energy, and comes with nice, sleek design. The travel packs are awesome. You get a nice container to store it in, as well as a cup to drink it in. And AG1, head over there. You'll get 5 free travel packs of AG1 and a year's supply of vitamin D when you make a purchase. That's athleticgreens.com/garden. Email your receipt to John Zanis, John_Zanis on Twitter, and you're going to get a phenomenal t-shirt. It's a phenomenal shirt, and it actually says phenomenal on it in allusion to my off-use word on the Garden Report. I also want to shout out Dart Adams, great supporter of the show, great supporter of my coverage. He has a new book out Slimen. Instead, We Became Evil, the true story of Slimen, a Danish rapper who left gang life out there after an assassination attempt. I'm excited to get into it. Dart Adams, brilliant with his research and writing. He co-authored that book with Slimen. I got it. Go get it yourself. I'm Bobby Manning. Might not see you next week. We might do one early next week. But honestly, this is, I think, is the week to bomb out and take a week off here. That's why I did two this week. So go and get those. Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes. Dome Theory is available everywhere. And we'll be back before the end of August here as NFL gets rolling and NBA, I think, starts to pick up a little bit transaction-wise once again. Teams start to get back together, all that. So I appreciate you listening. Appreciate Andrew Lopez, who is our guest here today. Let's talk some Pelicans. Durant, of course, again. And his thoughts on the Celtics. He actually covered the Celtics during the second round of the playoffs. So Andrew will give a bit of an outsider's perspective on them. Here he is. Hey, Bobby Manning here. Dome Theory 89 here on CLNS Media. And we have Andrew Lopez here, VSPN. Welcome in, Andrew. He covers the for ESPN. And why are we talking Pelicans here? I just find them interesting as a team, where they're at. I mean, this is one of the most renowned franchises. You know, Andrew, New Orleans native. They haven't had a lot of success over the years. They haven't had a lot of hype over the years. It's funny, a couple of years ago when they stacked them up with national TV games, and that never really got going for injuries and the bubble and all the other reasons there. That have sort of derailed throughout the years. But then, a year ago, Zion gets hurt. Looks like it's hitting rock bottom, and they actually have a pleasantly surprising season. So we're going to get into their trajectories, and I want to talk about them as they seem to me to be a very intriguing Kevin Durant destination as his trade gets stalled up here. They've been linked to him in a few reports. Doesn't seem like there's heavy interest. From your perspective, how likely is it that you get in on this KD pursuit?
If you would have asked me this the day KD made his demand, I would have told you a lot higher percentage than I thought that they could get into it. For instance, here's the day – I think he made his demand the day before free agency started.
Yep.
That just so happened to be the day – that just so happened to be the day that the Pels were introducing – Dyson Daniels, EJ Liddell, and their draft pick. So we had a press conference scheduled for 2 p.m. Central. Some of the media are in the was a media workroom to the left, press conference room to the right. And we're sitting in the media workroom, and the notification hits all of our phones at once, maybe 5 or 10 minutes before this press conference is supposed to start. The press conference doesn't start for the next 25 minutes as we're trying to figure out what's going on. Everybody's kind of talking late. You talk to people that day and it's like, well, yeah, it's Kevin Durant. Like you're going to put in and is it, you know, obviously at that point, I think, you know, maybe everybody was on the board, you know, across the league. We don't really know who's not in. And then as we've kind of gone on, I think the longer this has gone on, the more the Pels are, I don't want to say falling out, but kind of maybe pulling themselves out of the Kevin Durant race. I think the asking price is still too high. The Pelicans are very much on the we're going to keep Brandon Ingram train right now. And I think outside of that, I don't know what you do to get a deal done. Yeah, they have the picks, but if Brooklyn's goal is still get some players who could come in and help, I mean, at that point, you're looking at some combination of JV, Devontae Graham, Jackson Hayes, obviously maybe Dyson Daniel gets thrown in. But like I don't think that's as intriguing for Brooklyn as maybe some of these other packages that they can get out there. So I think the chances are a lot less than if you would have asked me the day before free agency.
So interesting, because how does it get to this point? He's obviously a top 5-10 player in the league, a guy that could transform your team into a championship contender potential. And it feels like whether it's the Pelicans, whether it's the Celtics, all these other suitors, and some of them like the Heat have the Ben Simmons complication that is sort of blocking. No one wants to include that centerpiece, it feels like. Now the Celtics have been reported to have offered Jalen Brown now feels like just laying back here and saying, like, all right, what's the lowest possible price we could get Durant for here? Raptors seem to have some pause. And then, as you said, Pelicans has an offer Ingram. So across the board, it doesn't seem like an Ayton as well is kind of off the board here. There's no centerpiece that the Nets can find for this trade for a player who could potentially bolster your team into championship contention, which I find confusing. There's injury concerns, there's off-court concerns with the whole demand here, and of course him demanding that Brooklyn fires Sean Marks and Steve Nash doesn't help things. But the talent to me still seems to be worth pushing in a player like Ingram, like Pascal Siakam potentially, or even Jaylen Brown, as valuable as he's become.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the talent is certainly there. You were talking about a guy who's top 15 all time, perhaps, or top 20 for sure. Certainly one of the best players in the league. But I think when you look at the recent years, he has had injury concerns. So maybe that gives you pause. He still played, 50 or 60 games a year. But I think when you really start to break it down, is that something you want to completely tear it down for? And I think in the Pelicans' view of things, Ingram was a guy who obviously came over in the AD trade. He is their last player asset of that. I mean, it was only Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, and BI along with the picks. But he kind of stayed through the bad part, kind of fighting through, and has kind of been your constant through this. He obviously he was supposed to play with Brandon. I mean, with Zion the first year, he had to take on those own responsibilities. He becomes an all-star. And I think you feel a little bit more connected to him in that way than just kind of wanting to include him in this deal for a 2-year run. And let's say it's a 2 or 3 year run. Obviously he's under contract for 4, but you feel that your window is open certainly for 2 to 3 years. Maybe you're looking at it as if Zion comes back healthy and takes the jump, my window is open for longer. If I have Z and BI and CJ and whatever else I need, and maybe that's the way you're looking at it. From Boston's perspective, I could see like you kind of built this thing. You were on the doorstep just a few months ago, right? You were there. You were in the finals with this duo. You've made some improvements. You can run it back with this, and you don't have to, end up putting Jaylen and other pieces to make money work into that deal. So I see it. But then at the end of the day, it's still Kevin Durant. It's still one of the best players in the world. And I think if I were able to sit with my staff and talk and figure out, hey, can we make this work? I think they would. But I think right now, the ultimate thing is you have Masai, you have Brad Stevens, you have Pat Riley, you have all of these guys just playing chicken with each other. Okay, well, I'm not putting my second best asset on the board. What are you going to do? And then what are you going to do? And I think it's whoever is going to crack first is the team that's going to legitimately go in with, okay, here's our second best player. Here's the other assets you need. But I think right now it's kind of a big game of chicken. And it's possible even Brooklyn, just hangs on to this because they're not getting the value they want. So it's going to be interesting to see how this works out.
Yeah, what will be the breaking point there? Do the Nets lower their price ultimately if he doesn't show up to camp and things start getting hectic there? Does one team even like potentially New Orleans just putting Ingram out there, Boston just putting Brown out there? I know the package was hypothetically Brown, White, a first-round pick. That's effectively just kind of a Brown Durant swap effectively there for those teams. I know losing White would probably hurt the Celtics a little bit, but getting Durant back would make that worthwhile. That seems to me to be the most likely thing in combination with everything else is, that big, big asking price you talk about for New Orleans. I think I read at one point that it would potentially be like Ingram, Jones, Alvarado, Graham, and they have tons and tons of picks here, which I think makes them even more intriguing. There's a bunch of different ways that the Pelicans could do this, but in Boston's case too, it's like it's a Brown, Smart, Grant, and all their future first round picks. The asking price does get ridiculous at some point, but if it does get lowered to one pick, Ingram, and I don't know, Graham swapping money back and forth with one of those Nets rotation players. Is that, do you think that could make it a little bit more palatable for a team like New Orleans, even though right now they're looking at Ingram and saying, all right, we're not pushing him in here? Because right now it would be Ingram plus tons of other stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny, you mentioned like that one package that was kind of floated out there of like Ingram, Herb Jones, Jose. And it's like, yeah, I'm sure if I'm Brooklyn, I would love that package. And if I'm from New Orleans, I'm like, maybe not. And I know it's one of these things where like you know, we talk about it on social media a lot. To get a great player, you have to give up good players, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can't just, okay, hey, we're gonna give up JV and this and salary filler, and we're gonna get, you know, Kevin Durant. But the thing becomes, let's look at Herb Jones. Herb is a guy who
he's who I'm stuck on
would want in a trade. So, but when you look at the contract valuation for Herb Jones and what his deal is compared to his value, that's a lot for the Pels. I mean, he's on a very, very good deal. Obviously, he was a second round pick, got a little bit of guaranteed money for 2 years. The fact that he's there, I think it's just very, very hard for, I think, them to it's going to be hard for them to put Herb in any deal because of how much you're getting out of. You're getting a guy who's an all defensive level player at, you know, $1.5 million, 1.7 for next year. I mean, I think I'm going to try to keep on to that at all costs. If you put Brandon in the deal again, they do not want to put Brandon in the deal. They, if you know, Griff loves him some Brandon Ingram, but there are ways to make that work. If the price point lowers, I think they will be involved. But as long as it's Brandon, I think they're gonna fight back as long as they can.
So I have, and this is so funny, this cult of personality Herb's developed. And it's worth it, right? He was an all defensive player and an all rookie team. And he was just amazing in that first year, what he was able to do out of Alabama. And everyone loves him, especially the analytical people. Like, they just look at him and they're like, this guy rocks. He's got this huge fan base and I'm in it. So I look at him and I say, man, it hurt to give him up. Like, it would, especially the defensive backbone that this team formed after years of just being horrendous on that end. I don't think you want to sacrifice that. So what's left? To get to the table, I think it's going to take Ingram. Like, in Boston's case, too. It's like, how can you get this
for
right now?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, you're looking at, you have to give up the second best asset, the second best player on your team. I think that's the line that Brooklyn's going to probably hold. And if they say, oh, well, he's on the table, or he's on the table, or he's on the table, then they're just going to keep that up the whole time. Right. So, but I agree with you. I do think it's for them to get that done. I think you're going to look at that, and until the Pels are going to hold off, obviously, as long as they can for it. But that you are going to eventually have to think, put your second best asset on the table.
Mm-hmm. So what is that second asset going to be here? So you got Ingram at $31 million. We try to get to that 44-ish, you know, 38 mark for matching. Graham's a good contract in here. Could be Valanciunas, but you probably want to keep Valanciunas as your center. And then a young guy, I don't know, is it Alvarado? Is it Trey Murphy? We'll throw Alvarado in there for now. This probably isn't enough.
Let's let Jose go home in his
Makes a lot of sense. So this probably doesn't work for Brooklyn. Like, you're happy to get Ingram. This is potentially like that low offer, maybe like a first round pick on top of this. That if there's a Durant emergency, maybe you could get it done for Ingram, Graham, Alvarado in a first. To make it a little more worthwhile on Brooklyn's end. So you go to the picks, right? Tons of first round picks. You got those Lakers picks. You got many more Bucks picks on top of it. So I don't know. Do you get to three? Do you get to five?
And some of those are some of those are swaps in there.
Yeah.
That are just, I think, like, some of those are swaps, I think, for both those clubs. But I mean, you have a lot of, I think that's what when this first broke, I mean, when we didn't really have much. I mean, I think, you know, NBA Today was on at 2:00 Central. The trade breaks 10 minutes before. Obviously, everything is kind of thrown out of whack. And the Pels were immediately kind of mentioned by our folks as you know, a plausible place because they have that mix of players and picks that not many other teams have, where you can still give away some of these players, but have your, you know, the core needed to then go ahead and go out there and say, hey, yeah, we can, you know, go out and compete for a championship with Kevin Durant, because you're not going to trade for KD without being able to still compete, right? So it's definitely something that you look up and down the roster, and as you mentioned, it could be Jose, it could be Trey, it could be obviously they, you know, the Brooklyn would want Herb. They're going to try to hold on to that for as long as possible. So I think once you get into it, though, you can see why they have a mixture there to try to do everything.
Yeah. So we'll hold Herb out. We're keeping Herb. He's not on the table. How do we make it worth Brooklyn's worthwhile? Just poor picks on their head. So, you know, 2023, I believe, is a swap with the Lakers. So you probably have to keep your pick too to actually execute that if you're going to do it. So we'll keep 23 off the table. Give up 24 unprotected. 25 would be a swap in that case. You got Bucks 25. You have that Lakers pick, which I think would be probably the crown jewel of this package, right? You can pick 24 or 25 between those two Lakers picks. Maybe the Lakers are in the tank at that point. And then, you know, those future picks, New Orleans 25, but Bucks 25, 26 swap, that would theoretically be there. 27. Pelicans unprotected, and then a 27. And I think there's some protections on those Bucks ones too. So, you know, we can get into the weeds on that, but you could hypothetically, if you're the Pelicans, give up upwards of 7-8 first round picks because of all these picks they've acquired between the Davis deal and the Holiday deal.
Yeah, because you have swaps, you have all these different things, and you can remove protections and do certain things. Which is as crucial, I think, if I'm looking at Brooklyn, because, you know, I was just kind of looking around at other teams and like just looking at future picks and stuff yesterday. And I realized, you know, I mean, Houston's got everything for them for the next 5 years.
They're 2028.
So you got unprotected and you got swaps. So in anything you want there, I mean, you need to, I think, recoup a little bit of that. Obviously, you're hoping between, you know, if you deal KD, you're probably, you know, maybe you're dealing Kyrie at that point as well, you know, purely speculative. But I think if that's the case, or if you even, you know, say you're going back and you're doing a deal with Miami, which means you would, if Bam is in that deal, then you're obviously going to have to get rid of Simmons in a separate deal. You try to recoup some things there. I think sometimes, you know, picks are going to have to be something you look at. And I think you see it here. The Pels have that mix. You know, from their perspective, I think if they're going to be giving up that many picks, they'll let, okay, we'll try to just throw role players in there again to try to keep Brandon. And then you roll with a, you know, a Zion, Brandon, KD, CJ lineup that at that point you have to keep Herb because Herb's going to have to guard six players at once. He'll have to guard the whole starting five and the bench in some of those lineups. But I think what you're going to see there is the more the picks, as you kind of pointed out, okay, if you keep Herb out, then maybe, okay, what is that worth? Is that worth two picks? Is that worth one pick? They're going to try to, if the picks go up, I think the quality of what you're giving out players-wise is going to go down for them.
Makes sense. And tricky thing is, Nets can't tank. So, that, you know, as we said, they don't have their own picks.
You got to stay good.
Try to remain competitive. That's where a guy like Ingram comes into play. And is he even good enough to keep them competitive in a really good East? Worthwhile question there. They're probably going to have to compromise on some stuff if they actually want to get this Durant deal done, because it just doesn't feel like they have the leverage. So maybe it is all the Pelicans picks plus role players. And, you know, could Herb even be a centerpiece of that deal if Ingram's held off the table? There's a million different ways the Pelicans can do this, which is why I find them so intriguing as a trade partner, as well as Toronto, who we kicked around last week. But I can't help myself with the trade machine. I'll put it away for now.
it's very funny to, because you look at it and think, when you're a team like Oklahoma City or now Houston or the Pels, who have accumulated so many picks, at some point you're going to have to cash those in.
Man, and what I better way?
And I think the other thing that Griff is looking at is this my time to cash in, or do I hold off? And obviously, As Boston found out, you know, sometimes you maybe you wait too long to cash in. Sometimes you work and it works out because all the picks do work out. And I think you're trying to also find that middle ground of like, hey, here's our first chance to really cash in. Because even with the CJ trade, you didn't have to give up a lot of draft capital. You were able to kind of play it safe, but you threaded the needle because you technically were given, you gave up a first round pick for Devontae Graham in that sign and trade. You were able to give up another pick that came because you didn't make the playoffs. Obviously, I think that ends up being the pick that Portland uses to get Jeremy Grant. But you didn't really have to cash in a lot to get CJ McCollum, but now you still have a lot of these. So this is your first real chance to cash in. Do you do it right now, or do you wait to try and, okay, let's see who's available next year. If, you know, when Zion's money kicks in, we still have, obviously Herb's going to be on a 1.7, but maybe it's 2 years down the line when Herb's money is going to kick in, when you have to pay him. And things just kind of, you know, you look down the line of when, or 2 summers from now, Herb, you know, inevitable extension will come in. At what point do you really cash these assets in? And I think that's the line that Griff is going to have to thread here for the next few years, is have all these things to use. When do I actually use them?
Yeah. And, you know, beyond the trade incarnations we can talk about here, what does that look like? Durant, CJ, Zion coming back. I know we're all interested in seeing what Zion coming back looks like itself. You have Jonas as a big man mixed in there. Like you said, you have Herb defending pretty much everybody in those kind of lineups. It'd be the ultimate positionless basketball. And man, would it be fun, I think. Those three scorers, couple of versatile role guys mixed in there, whether it's Nance, whether it's Herb, some deeper bench guys, a shooter like Murphy. They could almost do whatever they want lineup-wise around those three guys. And I would have to think, you know, of course, they're going to have to defend. They're going to have to mesh as three stars there. Who's got the ball? You know, who's making things happen? But that team on paper looks like on the short list, like 1-3, 3-5, the top championship favorites in the league at that point, which New Orleans has never been anywhere close to there.
No, and it would be the first jump. And I think the other thing here that you would have to think about in this scenario is if you traded for a guy like Kevin Durant, you're going to be in the luxury tax. There's only two teams in the NBA who have never paid the luxury tax. One is Charlotte and one is New Orleans. Is ownership ready to make that jump? They have committed to that whenever it's time, but I think the time is going to be when it's time to make the jump to compete for a championship. So I think they would be on board in this scenario, but it would be fun to watch offensively. I think this is a team that would put it like this. I'd take the over every night on whatever the Pelicans game would be, because I don't think we're going to see many 90-88 ball games. If that's the lineup that the Pelicans are rolling out there, you're going to have a lot of offense out there.
Yeah, is the ball in Durant's hands? Is Zion playing off him? CJ's spreading the floor, I'd imagine, that mix. And, you know, both Zion and KD are guys that can get off the ball and do some stuff too. And we saw Zion become a killer facilitator in 2021. They can almost just interchange anything in terms of facilitating and finishing with those three. Like, that would be, I know, like, you think CJ, Zion, Durant, it's kind of like a weird big three name wise because that just isn't something people were imagining a couple years ago, but that would almost be like a perfect mixture of talents there: shooting, passing, finishing, mid-range game in Durant's case, some shooting in Durant's case as well from three. Like, you have a little bit of everything between those three.
Yeah, and you saw a little bit of that in what the way Brandon plays is Brandon wants to be in the mid-range. He is a very good – I mean, I think every time we see this, you know, who are the best mid-range scorers, and I think he's in that top five in terms of field goals made. I mean, obviously we saw in the playoffs, he can get to that spot, he can get to his three, and then you just have, you know, now a seven-foot version of that in Kevin Durant. Essentially doing the same thing. It's not very much that you have to change. The interesting part is how does Zion would fit into that? And I think even aside from KD talks, I think that's kind of the thing I want to see most about what this team is going to do. Zion kind of went into a second gear 2021 when Stan kind of put the ball in his hands and let him become this point Zion that just kind of took over. And we saw his assists go up to about 4 a game. He was scoring still efficiently. And right now, what you have is a team that I don't know if you really have a starting point guard because
no.
let's just say like, okay, right now for them. No, because you're going to have, I mean, CJ is your point guard, but you're going to have CJ, you're going to have Herb, you're going to have Brandon, you're going to have Z, you're going to have JV. And you have 4 guys in that lineup who can initiate your offense. There were several games last year where Herb gets the ball off the tip and gets the Pels in their first play, which is crazy to think because in summer league last year, Herb was like their small ball 5 at times, who didn't even start games, by the way. Did not start a game in summer league and then turned into the Herb Jones that everybody kind of saw last year once Josh Hart got hurt early because of the way he played defense when they were doing offseason workouts. And you got 4 guys there who can really initiate the offense. You can get point Zion back going. You got CJ. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch, I think, either way, if, you know, they make a trade or not, just because of the versatility that they're going to have on the offensive end.
So you mentioned ownership. You mentioned this team, the city. Of course, you're from New Orleans there. Give people an idea of where that on this team at this point, because they haven't had the best attendance, I'd imagine, over the years. It's obviously a Saint City football state. Do you need something like Durant to put them on the map, or do you think this young team, this team that's aspiring to rise as the years go on here, could do it more naturally? Does New Orleans really need this stamp that's going to have everybody's heads turning and this hype train rolling right with Durant coming in?
I think they had it with Z, and I'm New Orleans native. I've been here outside of a few years covering LSU. I've lived in New Orleans my entire life and have been to many a game at the former New Orleans Arena, now Smoothie King Center. during the run late in the season this year for a team that was under 500, but making a push for the play-in tournament, was some of the loudest I've ever heard that place. I was here for a couple of playoff games between the Hornets and Lakers when it was Kobe and Chris Paul back in 08 or 07. I was in the conference semifinals against Dallas and San Antonio that year when they make the push with the 56-26 team. For 14-15, it's a late season push to make the playoffs with Anthony Davis and the Monty Williams-led team. Last year, the end of the year, the final 6-8 games, I mean, that place was crazy. The playoff games, that place was insane. And I think the natural building, I think that the fans have kind of got behind it. I mean, you have Jose Alvarado chance in, you know, anytime he gets in the game. When he gets his chase down steal, the place explodes. Like of that series, the loudest singular moment might have been when he got Chris Paul with the chase down steal in game 4, I think it was.
New Orleans icon Chris Paul.
And I think the fans are always going to overvalue their own players. That's just a given. But I think the way that this team kind of came together, it really, the way CJ came in, the way Larry Nance came in, it really started to kind of embody that role, and they are playing off of it. Go back to when they traded for CJ McCollum. This was the absolute weirdest thing I've ever seen in covering the NBA or seeing being a fan of the NBA. Josh Hart, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Tomas Satoransky, Didi Luzada are the 4 guys who get traded. That night, the Pels have a game, home game. Josh Hart and Nikhil Alexander-Walker show up at the game, sit courtside after they have been traded. I'm pretty sure they sat in Brandon Ingram's seats. He has a set of 3 or 4 courtside seats. they sat there, and it was just so crazy, because you look at the things that they are building here and you see what kind of Willie Green has done. And if you ask most Pelicans fans, I think right now, the number one thing that they wanted out of this season, of this postseason, they wanted to try to find a way to bring Josh Hart and Nikhil back because of moments like that. They have invested in this team. And I think right now with ownership's invested in the team. They have a plan now to, you know, what happens if Mrs. Benson, you know, passes away. If Gail Benson passes away, the team is supposed to get sold, and then the money kind of goes to the city. Nobody's gonna benefit off of it. She is committed to doing what they want. If they need renovation, they need it. Everything is lining up here in a way that it hadn't for quite some time. And I think because of Z, even though you mentioned the TV schedule and how much the NBA loaded up the national TV schedule for the Pels the first 2 years, only our first yep. 3 years, only for things to go sideways. We kind of saw how they did it this year. There's like two or three on the first half of the schedule, and then there's like 10, like starting a little bit before the All-Star break to the end of the year. Because of Z, because of this, I can say, I don't know. The team got here in 2002. I don't know if there's been this much anticipation and hype going into a season since New Orleans has been a franchise, since the Hornets came down here. I think the hype is real. And I think if they can build off of this year, I don't think you need a Durant. I don't think you need I think you have your superstar in Z if he can stay healthy, which I think he's made some changes so that can happen. I think things are looking up for a way for this franchise that it just hasn't before.
Is that how fans are feeling too? Because that's where Celtic fans are at, for, you know, different reasons. But they like Brown, they like the team, they like where it's going. So why mess with it? Is that where Pelicans fans are at
too? I think if you ask a Pelicans fan what their KD deal looks like, it's JV, Devontae Jackson, Garrett Temple, and like one swap. All right. That's how good you're feeling about this. And it's only JV, not because they don't like JV. It's because, okay, well, somehow the money's gotta work. If you ask an average fan who doesn't understand how the money works, you're gonna be like, okay, well, just give him Temple and Najee, and well, Najee messes up the vibes, maybe not even Najee. So like I think there's just a lot there where I think fans are feeling like this is, look, it's not necessarily going to be championship or bust in New Orleans, but watching how fans got behind them in that little play-in push, and this is still a team who finished 36-46. Obviously a 3-16 start doesn't help that. But you played after that, you played 500 ball or a little bit better. You were trying to mix in CJ. Brandon missed a good month of work. You didn't have Z. And now you add a guy who averaged 27-7 on 61% shooting. I think there's a reason for fans to fans are kind of behind this team right now, I think, full throttle.
And that Ingram playoff run was – you look at the numbers of that, 27 a game, 48% shooting, 40% from three. He reached a new level with 6 assists per game, too, as a facilitator and all that. He's younger than Jaylen Brown, too, when you actually talk about these possible returns for Durant. Like, he's younger. He signed 3 years. It's a case that Ingram could potentially, with all those things considered, be more valuable than Jaylen Brown, even if don't think he's a better player. It's probably close this point. But you mentioned Zion. We got to talk Zion. I don't know. I've been up and down on him. I think Yurkalo made this argument in favor of New Orleans being a Durant team, that Zion's health, Zion's window, trajectory with his career after multiple injuries here, a whole lost season. If you get him fresh for a 23 now and 20 of that, and let's say this is like a worst case scenario here, that's like Zion's peak these next 2 years. Maybe there's some injuries after that, maybe throughout his career on and off the court. That's all potentially possible here with the weight, with some of the injuries he's had early in his career. maybe this young ascending team here, and you're actually this team that's got these players at or near the peak, and this is that, like you said, opportunity to consolidate, and, you know, Zion, CJ, Durant, boom, 2-3 years of championship contention, and you go to that. But let's just talk Zion, where he's at, coming back from this foot injury. We've all seen the dunking videos. What are the expectations for him coming back this year, you think?
Right now, look, we talked about it, obviously, the end of 2021, that season. He was point Zion. He kind of had the ball in his hands a lot, trying to mesh with where him and Brandon were. Now you throw another ball handler in there with CJ. Those three have – how they mesh is going to determine how the season goes. I think Z is ready to prove to people that he is that guy. He is the 27-7 guy. He's the guy who, you know, was an all-star technically because, you know, Joel tested positive. He was an all-star starter that year. A lot of people, you mentioned Zach, considered him for an all-NBA spot. I mean, that's how good he was. And then he, you know, he played 61 of 72 games that year, relatively healthy. I think the only really times that he missed 60 games at the end of the year because of a broken finger, missed 3 games in the middle because of a sprained thumb, and like one or two others, like one off night. I mean, he was a relatively healthy season for him. Again, outside of some freak injuries that happened with his hand. And for him to kind of, you go back into this lineup, he's got a personal guy trainer now that he's working with, along with what they're doing with the Pelican strength staff and nutrition.
And the chef. Don't forget
he's
the
got
chef.
A chef now, master chef alum Christian Green, who's top 10 on Master Chef right now, as you continue to watch the season. Christian Green, he's in there getting him right. I've seen him several times. Obviously, you've seen the Duncan videos, and he's done that. You go back and you look at some of the – there was a video of him when he went to the Paris event, the Jordan event out in Paris, where he, like, walks into a 360 windmill. Walks. No start. He literally just, oh, give me the ball. Dot, dot. And then goes. And they're like, okay, I think he's good. And I think this is going to be a prove it year for him. And I think he wants to kind of shut up a lot of people who have said a lot of things about him. He mentioned how mentally draining last year was, getting the foot injury, thinking he'll be back for the regular season, and then having setbacks and not being able to play at all. I think he understands, okay, look, This is my time. It's time to get back. It's time to kind of show people what it is. The relationships are building are with the team. He flies from Paris to Vegas for a summer league game. Almost the whole team is sitting there. There's one point, I think, where CJ kind of like comes in and like splits up the big brother, like the little brothers. Like, he's got to sit in between Brandon and Zion just so he can kind of talk to all, you know, both of them at the same time. We obviously never got to see what a Z Ingram McCollum lineup looks like. I think right now that is kind of where they're at. And like I said, the anticipation level is very, very high in New Orleans because of those things.
Everywhere. And you mentioned the TV. They're a little low, I feel like, especially relative to those other years. They're in that New York range with the Nets and Knicks. They actually have more, I think, one more than Miami and Chicago, and, you know, quite a few more than Atlanta. A bunch of teams at the bottom, so they're somewhere in the middle there. Like you said, they're probably hedging on, all right, is this going to be a great team, or is this going to be a more disappointing team?
And you got some times. I mean, when you backload a schedule like that, then you have the ability to, if something goes wrong, if there's injuries or something like that, you can flex out of some of those late games. The Pels fans found that out last year when they got flexed out of a few games in the January, February area, but. You're kind of hedging your bets a little bit on what are they going to look like? Is everybody going to be healthy? And then, you know, if that's the case, and that's when I want them on national TV is February, March, and that's when they're going to be in theory making a push with the big fella.
And they'll come to Boston on January 11th. That's definitely one of the dates I have circled on my calendar out here. They host
that's an early 18th. Tip, right?
7:30 Eastern, regular one.
There was another game that was early. Maybe it was the Cleveland game. I think it's on MLK Day. That was like a weird tip for them.
Some big ones out of the gate for them, though. Opening against the Nets. Who knows how that could shake out. the Mavericks, so Luka battle early on TNT. The Suns, Clippers, Lakers all in a row on the road trip. And then the Warriors come to town on November 4th. So it's big opponents right out of the gate for this group.
The Clippers one is funny because I think the Clippers, that's one of the early tips. It's a noon local tip. Which essentially is going to give them, I think, 5 nights in LA at that point.
Wow.
Because you have a road game, I think, against Phoenix.
Yep.
On that Friday. You're going to go, obviously, if you're playing in Phoenix that night, you're going to go to LA early. You'll have 2 nights in LA before the Clippers game. You'll have 3 more nights before the Lakers game. I mean, it's going to be quite the stay in, on the West
Coast.
3
nights, you're right. Yeah. Because it's that afternoon game. That's some wacky stuff in this year's schedule. Big homestands, too. I think New Orleans actually has a 6-game homestand right after that as well.
It's kind of funny because it's a 6-game homestand, but it's not. Well, like the first game is on the second end of a back-to-back, and then the 6th game is on the first end of a back-to-back. So you kind of lose a little bit of your advantages there, but, I mean, that's still a solid stretch. There's also a stretch where they have 5 games where I think it's home against Phoenix, at Utah.
Yep.
And then back to Phoenix. It looks weird on the schedule to me to have a stretch where you're playing
I love those
2 teams overnight. I like it. I think it helps get you ready for playoffs, especially if you're a young team, a young coach, to have adjustments. It's just weird to look at on a schedule to see it in a row like that.
Yeah, that and some of these big homestands, some of the big road trips. Celtics have those too. I like a lot of the stuff they did with the schedule this year. The national TV stuff lines up for the most part. Maybe the Lakers are a mistake. We'll see on that front. But I'd love to get into the weeds on Murphy, Jones, some of the younger guys on this roster. But I do want to get your thoughts on the Celtics before we get you out of here, because you were around them during the playoffs. I believe round 2, round 3.
The Bucks
were you there for the finals as well?
No, just really the Bucks series. And then series. I, like many of people who I think covered that series, caught COVID and came home right when I got home from that series. But no, that was a fun stretch. I mean, that was obviously, I mean, you watch a lot of other teams, but being able to watch them up close. I really did feel like whoever won that series was going to come out of the East. Both of them were going to match up against Miami, I think, in a positive way. Obviously, injuries played a big part in that, and a lot of the playoff race. Even Boston dealing with Smart's quad and missing Horford for that first game, and having to deal with now. Obviously, Rob was, missing some time. Rob, who I covered in high school, by the way, when he was in the state
from,
championship game his senior years.
Was it Vivian, Louisiana?
Vivian, Louisiana. He went to North Caddo High School, and he dragged the team to the state semifinals. It's funny to me to watch guys like Rob and Mitch. Like, I remember watching them in high school. I want to say in like the state championship game, Rob shot like 7 threes. He might have been like 2 for 7, 3 for 7, but he was like all over the place. Mitchell Robinson in high school used to shoot threes all the time. And then you watch the guy when to get to the NBA, and like, if Mitch shoots something outside of 10 feet, it's like what happened? And it's just kind of funny to watch how, like, you forget how skilled these guys are on just a regular basketball level. But
you see those flashes with Rob, the passing, even when he does take a shot, it's not often. It looks good.
I'm telling you, when he was in high school, he had a green light to kind of do whatever he wanted. Now, granted, he's at a small 2A level school in North Louisiana. There weren't many other, 6'8", 6'9", bodies that were going to go at Rob Williams. But, I just remember him being able to do a lot of different things at that level. I love Rob. I'm glad he got paid. I think he is I wish you would have, we would have been able to see him healthy during that stretch, fully healthy. And I think he would have made a difference on a lot of different levels, even getting into June. I don't think he was where he really wanted to be, right?
Yeah. And I think that is what gets lost a little bit with the Durant discussion in Boston here. Now, he's off the table in that, which I understand. Like, his upside and where he allowed that team to get when he was playing at his best was kind of incredible. Like, number one defense by far. I thought historic level defensive production from that group when they were at their best, because they were blowing out everybody, including the best teams in the league. They won 22 of 25. That starting unit healthy was the best in the league statistically, and some of Rob Splitt's just on off stuff, it was astonishing, like the difference he made. And he, you know, I know Smart won defensive player of the year, but Rob was the ceiling raiser there. I thought, like, Smart might have been the floor for that group, the foundation, but Rob, I thought, took them to another level with the off-ball stuff he was able to do there. So, like, yeah, Brogdon coming in is going to help this group. Rob, I feel like, healthy, and like you said, we barely saw that in the playoffs. Didn't play the Brooklyn series, came back, wasn't really himself, got hurt again in the second round, and then, you know, was kind of limited the rest of the way. This team with him healthy could have breezed to a championship with how they looked during the regular season. So maybe you don't mess with that.
I am obviously, like I said, a big Rob guy. And I feel like even because I was still watching, you know, the pressers and was around to help if, you know, once in the Miami series and then obviously in the finals, I feel like of those like 20 games, I feel like it was, you were asking Ime in the first, I was like, all right, well, what's Rob's status? Like it was an update like every game on Rob, whether or not he was in or out or out, or, and it just kind of, you know, and I get why. I mean, they were trying to win and get him in, and it wasn't about, you know, a time where you could kind of afford to get him rest, even as he kind of worked his way back. I liked the leadership. Horford kind of settled back into the role that he had years ago, and I think reminded people why he is getting paid what he's getting paid. I really like the Brogdon addition to help out. And I was a big dark white guy anyway before the trade. And
he was awesome in San Antonio.
And I know he struggled a lot at times when he first got there, but seemed to settle into his role a little bit late. I think a full offseason there is going to help him. The Brogdon addition helps. I think the Gallo addition helps. Consider, and when you go back and you look at what you have to give up to get Brogdon, and I can kind of replace some of those with Gallo minutes now. I mean, it's, if you're looking at it, and you're, especially if you're a Boston fan, I could see why. You're like, well, we just went to the finals. We added Brogdon and Gallo and didn't really take anybody from our deep playoff rotation. We didn't lose anybody off of that. Tice is kind of was playing spot minutes at that point. I can see why you're like, all right, well, do we really need to add a Kevin Durant? Because we just did all this without him. Now I think adding KD, like, depending on what you have to give up for KD, again, we talked about that. He's a very, very good player, right? One of the best. But I can see from that mindset of, I mean, we did it this way. We were this good without these things. And I think that kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah. The only thing that can hold this group back, it seems like, is injuries. Rob, as you mentioned, has dealt with quite a few in his career. Brogdon, you're almost shooing in him to miss some percentage of the season the way his last three or four seasons have gone here. So they have the depth to sustain it now. They have multiple layers at each position. Center could be a little thin, but they do have two starting level players at that spot. So I love what they have. It's just like we said with New Orleans, if it gets to a point where it's Ingram for Durant with some like a piece or two, or Brown for Durant, like, is Durant enough of an upgrade on Brown that makes the Celtics like, boom, lock championship favorites like the Warriors were a couple years ago? Not quite to that level, but about as close as you can get. That's sort of the trade-off right now, I think everybody's debating.
Yeah, no, and it's once you reach that price point, it's kind of why I think I still like Toronto,
like a Siakam type thing.
Yeah, as the KD destination, because I think they get the right mix of players who can help right away, maybe getting a future asset or two to keep kind of building. I think both Boston and New Orleans are kind of in situations where the price point would have to lower itself a lot for them to consider it because of the natural team building. Boston being where, obviously, again, a finals team last year. New Orleans, while they are just a play-in team, you see some of the Phoenix, how Phoenix got there. Obviously, you have Willie Green, who was in Phoenix. You have a team who makes a push to the play-in and wins some big games, pushes Phoenix themselves to six games in the first round. You kind of look at that maybe as like their bubble run, the Phoenix bubble run when they went 8-0, and they kind of said how much that helped them. Obviously, you add Chris Paul to that group, but maybe Zion's the Chris Paul and kind of helps elevate the Pelicans to another level. And I think they want to see where that goes, where I think both of these teams, both Boston and New Orleans, kind of want to see where they go with their natural building more so than wanting to upset that with a Kevin Durant. Again, I would have to think long and hard about it because of who Kevin Durant is. But I think both teams kind of want to see where their team building is going.
There's some similarities there for sure. Ingram, Zion, and Brown Tatum. That's probably 1 and 2 in terms of young duos in this league right now. And then you got CJ there and Horford in Boston as sort of those veteran presences. And who knows, maybe we'll be talking about a Celtics-Pelicans finals here over the next year or two. We'll have Andrew Lopez back. In that case, appreciate him being here. Of course, if you watch Garden Report, if you watch Dome Theory, head over to athleticgreens.com/garden. Check out their product. Get a 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Appreciate you supporting them. And appreciate Andrew being here. Check him out on ESPN. Check him out when the Pelicans are on ESPN this year. Wish it could be more, but we'll see. Maybe they'll get flex on later in the year.
Maybe we'll get some flex games in. If Z works out, maybe we'll see it a little bit more.
Appreciate you, Andrew. Exciting times in New Orleans. We'll talk to you soon here.